I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can find the books, people, recipes, tips, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails that we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Are you traveling for the holidays or a winter getaway? How can you get a better seat when you travel? Ways to tell if those are fake photos of the apartment you plan to rent. Learn how to move faster through airport screening. We all want to know that. When are travel fares at their lowest point? The Trip Doctor knows. She is Amy Farley, Travel and Leisure Magazine's monthly Trip Doctor columnist and news editor. She's a walking encyclopedia of travel information, here to answer my questions and yours at 203-776-9677. Thank you, Amy. You did a great column not long ago on how to get through airport screening faster. What does it take, money?
You know what? It takes signing up for the right program. I have to say, it's very interesting. You know, TSA gets a bad rap from a lot of people, but they've really come out in front of trying to expedite people through security in the last year or so. Mm-hmm. They launched a program called PreCheck, which you used to just be able to sign up through your airline, through your frequent flyer program, but now it's launching to the general public.
Yeah, that's 40 hubs across the country, right?
Exactly, yeah. And what it's doing, soon you're going to be able to actually sign up in airport, just as long as you sort of go to the pre-check area, give them a little bit of information about yourself. You don't even need to show them your passport. You don't even need to have a passport. But you'll be eligible for pre-check screenings, which means you get to a special line where you get expedited through. You don't have to take off your shoes. Mm-hmm. You don't have to take your laptop out of its case.
Yeah, great.
And so that means, you know, even if you're not part of the pre-check program, you actually benefit from it because it takes people out of the regular lines, gets people through faster. So pre-check is the way to go. You can join through your frequent flyer program of your airline. There's 7 partner airlines with TSA right now. You can sign up in airport soon, or you can be a member of the Customs and Border Patrols or Trusted Traveler Program, which means that you've given them a little bit more detailed information about yourself, and that gets you expedited entry through the customs lines when you travel back to the States internationally, and then you also get pre-check benefits.
And Amy, do you mind if I quote that's the website that you list for that in your column? It's globalentry.gov.
Globalentry.gov and TSA.gov is where you can find more information about the pre-check program.
You also mentioned in that column that there is a website called ClearMe, and that's biometric information, right?
Yeah, this is an interesting company that launched about 8 years ago and then kind of went on hiatus and has come back. And what they do is they can't expedite you through the security line. They can expedite you to the front of the security line, but you still go through the regular checks, so that means you will have to take off your shoes and you'll have to have your 3-ounce liquids and all of that. But they're at certain airports and they're rolling out, and so, you know, if you're traveling to the Denver airport, there is a long snake of a line that you have to go through before you get to the security check. So if you've done ClearMe and given them biometric information, then you can speed to the front of that line. So it's worth looking into if you're flying through the airports frequently that Clear has outposts.
And they charge a fee for this service. I think it's around $179.
That's what it was last time I checked. So yeah, it's definitely something you want to do if you are a frequent traveler through those airports. Otherwise, you know, TSA is on a roll expanding this pre-check program, and they are, you know, increasing it exponentially in the next few months. So it's definitely worth, I would say everybody should enroll in that.
Okay, so that was how to get through airport security faster. Mm-hmm. Great, great tips. The other one that I was so interested in, I love your column, is one you did on getting a good airplane seat. You know, we're all jockeying to do that, either at the last minute or, and sometimes you sign up so early and you think, well, I'll have no problem, and somehow you do. So let's go through some sites. Let's talk about the strategy here.
Well, so it used to be, you know, you'd buy your ticket and then you could get a seat assignment just like that. But now airlines have realized that they can really monetize the seating process. And so they have premium seating, you know, they have seats that they reserve for their loyal flyers, their, you know, elite ranking members of the loyalty program, or they'll charge regular flyers to get into those seats. So it's become much more complicated. And, you know, you can end up in the back of the plane in a middle seat quite easily if you're sort of not jumping on it quickly. So first and foremost, what we say is if you're really interested in finding the right seat, sometimes it's a question of finding the right airline, because some airlines, like Virgin America, are particularly good when it comes to comfortable cabins, no matter where you're sitting on the plane. There is a website called Seat Guru, which we love, that will, you know, help you sort your flights by duration, by price, by all those things that you normally sort flights by, but also it will sort it by the comfort level of the flight itself.
So that's Seat Guru, SEATGURU, SeatGuru.com.
Yes, SeatGuru.com. The other thing you can do is consider a premium economy seat if legroom really is a priority for you. Airlines now, almost all the domestic carriers have a premium economy class, which is not much different from economy, but it usually has 3 or 4 inches of extra legroom there. Mm-hmm. And depending on how long your flight is, that you'll be charged more for these seats. But they are worth it if you are taller and it's really uncomfortable for you to be sitting anywhere but an aisle or an exit row.
And I see why you say stick with a favorite airline if you can, because the prices for trading up for just a halfway decent seat with a little bit more room can range from $8 to $129 per flight.
It can definitely add up. The thing is, getting getting an aisle row non-premium economy seat, sometimes you can find yourself spending $25 each way for that seat. You know, if you're traveling with a family of four, that can add up really quickly. So having loyalty, if you're an elite ranking member of your loyal program and you're traveling with your family, you'll be able to choose these seats, which sometimes are blocked off to regular travelers when they try to go pick their seats after they book their flight.
By the way, as you hear us talking about the websites that Amy recommends, we're going to post a link to these. So if you're trying to memorize these as we go along, of course, you can listen to the show again and again online at our site. But also, we're going to post these at WNPR.org. And our producer, Jonathan McNichol, is tweeting them as we go along during this show. Oh, okay. This I love. Amy, when you said that there's a guy who will keep track of when better seats are becoming available, because sometimes the airlines are holding them to see who's actually buying at the highest price, and then they release them at a certain point, these preferred seats.
Well, it's true. So what they do with their elite flyers is they will put their elite flyers in these, you know, preferred aisle seats on the airplane. And then about 24 hours before departure, if they have business class seats available, they'll upgrade their elite flyers. And at that point, these preferred seats in the economy cabin become available. So if you are on the phone with the airline or online 24 hours before the flight departs, you have a better chance of sort of getting these seats that have just opened up that weren't available to you maybe 3 weeks ago when you booked your ticket. So we say 24 hours before the flight, check in, because there might be seats available that weren't there a day earlier. And then do it again when you get to the ticket counter, do it again when you get to the gate. Just keep checking in, because the elite flyers are the ones that have been occupying the better seats in the back of the cabin. They're going to be moving to the front of the cabin. Now you have a shot to get a better seat.
Oh, Amy Farley, who's a trip doctor for Travel and Leisure Magazine on a monthly basis, working for them online too, news editor, just doing all kinds of things. And I'm crazy about your column. Here's a reason why. You list expert flyer. .com, because they will take on the responsibility for you and send you an alert if you register with them about
right.
when better seats become available. That's invaluable.
That's right. I mean, often, you know, we offer up all of these tips, but you often have to spend a lot of time to do these. So Expert Flyer will do that on your behalf, which is terrific. And I would be remiss if I didn't also mention travel agents. If you book through a travel agent, they will be working on your behalf on these things. And often, a travel agent isn't going to charge you to book to book your travel. They will be doing it and earning a commission. So you actually don't have to pay them anything extra, but they will act as your advocate, which is especially helpful. You mentioned holiday travel. If your plans get foiled when you're traveling over the holidays and you need to rebook or whatever it is, reschedule, having a travel agent as your advocate is great.
We're going to get to holiday travel. We know a lot of people, it's the busiest time of the year. We have all kinds of holidays just ahead of us. We're going to get to that in just a second. Amy, how does it work in terms of getting bumped up to first class? We hear about people who say, oh, I said I'll give you $100 and they bump me up to first class, and then we try it and that really doesn't work. How does this work?
You know, honestly, at this point, it really is about loyalty. It's about being one of the premium flyers with a carrier. Mm-hmm. And so if you can be less price sensitive over the course of the year when you're booking your tickets, your travel, and stick with an airline, you will build points with that airline, and then you become sort of first in line to get bumped up. But the days of, I mean, it still can happen if you dress really nice or nicely and show up and you're very nice to the gate agent, you might get that upgrade. But to be honest, I think those days are more or less over, and it's going to those elite flyers. And so it's about building points with a carrier, you know, finding the right credit card and using that card to sort of max out your points, and then also racking up points with the carrier.
Is there a way, I want to get to whether there is a way to not be rejected trying to use your points. Sometimes you call and you say, I want to use points to fly here, and they will say, oh, that's all booked. And I have this sneaky feeling that that's not exactly the case. So we're going to take Amy Farley, you stay right where you are, Trip Doctor, Travel and Leisure Magazine. We're going to continue with more of your great tips. And we invite you to join us at 203, talk to Amy, 203-776-9677. We'll be right back. Find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. And as we go, we are tweeting information about a lot of these travel websites that Amy Farley likes a lot and talks about in her Travel and Leisure Trip Doctor column. We're very grateful she's on the show for the hour. We invite you to talk with her at 203-776-9677. So, Amy, how does it work with using your points? Is it always easy, or is it just by chance that I'm having a little trouble now and then?
No, it is not by chance. The big trend over the last decade or so, since credit card companies started partnering with airlines and issuing miles, means that airline miles have become very devalued, and also we're just sort of flooded with them. So it's tough to find award seats. Those are the tickets that are available for points, because not every airline has a finite number of award seats that they'll allow for each flight. You know, there's a company that actually does a study each year to find out which airlines offer the most award seat availability.
Oh.
And so I guess my best advice would be to rack up points with those airlines that usually have award seat availability on their planes. This year's standouts included Southwest, AirTran, JetBlue, and then of the major domestic carriers, United is the best.
What's the site that keeps track of this? Do you remember?
You know, it's called the SwitchFly Reward Seat Availability Study, and I'm not sure that you can find it online.
Okay. The SwitchFly. Okay, very good. So you never know. So let's get to the holidays. A lot of people traveling. How about some tips on how to handle this?
Bring your sense of humor and patience. I'd say the main thing is to look for, if you can, try to avoid airports that have the worst delays. If you can, route yourself through the airports that have the best delays. You know, if you have to take a flight that with a stopover, there are some airports that are particularly bad at on-time departures. We crunched the numbers recently, and the year-to-date airports with the worst percentage of flight delays include Chicago Midway and Chicago O'Hare, Newark, Dallas, and Denver. Hmm. But then on the best list, you find Salt Lake City at the best, or number one, Portland, Seattle, Minneapolis, and Washington, Reagan. So Minneapolis-St. Paul is a big hub for Delta Airlines. So if you are looking to fly, you know, across the country, then you can route yourself through Minneapolis. That's a better option than
Chicago.
Wow,
and watch out for Newark, it sounds like.
Watch out for Newark, yeah. Luckily, you've got two other airports in the New York area to choose from.
Well, and here was a message on Facebook from Babette Georgie, and she says, I love to travel the country by train, but the service seems pretty inconsistent from what I've heard. Some trains are filthy, others are clean. All of them offer these tiny bathrooms and not necessarily a shower. She's asking, Amy, if you have any tips for finding cross-country trains.
Unfortunately, I just don't think that, and I hate to get in trouble with rail enthusiasts in the States, but I just don't think that rail travel here compares to what you find, say, in Europe. Mm-hmm. If you want to travel across the States, you know, on a train, there certainly are options, but it's just not going to be the level of comfort and luxury and speed, frankly, that you're going to find if you were doing it in Europe. I think you just sort of have to take your knocks.
Let's talk about money-saving trips when you're traveling on the holidays.
Money-saving tricks. Well, the first one is if you can be flexible with your time of departure, your dates of travel, that's a big one. You know, the Sunday after Thanksgiving is a really busy time. So if you are flying back home and you can do it on the Monday or Tuesday afterwards, that's better. And likewise for Christmas, you know, the Saturday before Christmas and the Sunday afterwards are tough. The Sunday following New Year's Eve, January 5th, is going to be a big day. So if you can be flexible with your times, then you will get better prices. Also, if you're thinking about booking your tickets, you got to do it as soon as possible. I say this having not booked my Christmas tickets yet, and I'm kicking myself because I know it's going to be terrible. It's Dr. Heal Thyself. You got to book as soon as possible because those prices just aren't going to fluctuate. They're just going to keep going up.
Amy, what do I know? You're the expert in this. But a thing happened to me where I had to travel on the holiday itself, and it was as if they had put the airplane up there for me. I was practically by myself on the plane.
No, thank you for reminding me of that. Of course, yes. Christmas Day is a great day to travel, as is Thanksgiving Day. You'll get cold turkey once you arrive, but, you know, you won't have to put up with the masses. Those are terrific days to fly, as is January 1st for most people are at home nursing a hangover. So if you can get on that early flight, you'll have it to yourself.
I flew on New Year's Eve. There was nobody. I thought it would be packed. There was absolutely nobody. So what about these? You mentioned that if the holiday weekend ends on Sunday, as it does, and you fly Monday, you'll have... Are they pushing out? Are they stealing from the bumper season? You know, are they now trying to steal Monday and keeping the prices up a little bit?
You know, it's really based on, the way airlines set their prices is really based on inventory management, complex algorithms. So as most people aren't choosing to fly on the Monday and Tuesday, you'll be able to find better prices. Once people start choosing to extend Thanksgiving, you know, past the weekend, then you'll see those prices going up. But you should be able to find better prices.
Well, that brings us to cheaper tickets in general.
Mm-hmm.
How does it, you mentioned these complicated algorithms that they use. They know when most of us are signing up for things. So how do we work in our own favor? How do we, what's the best time to check on prices?
To be honest, I love, it's all about outsourcing it, but there's a new website called tripwatcher.com, which I love. You can sign up and say exactly what flight you're looking for, what time period, and then it will send you instant email alerts when the price drops. Mm. There's also great websites out there. Airfare Watchdog is a terrific one that monitors fare sales and prices along popular routes and will send out alerts when those prices go down. And they're terrific. They'll send you email alerts, but also following these sites on Twitter is really good because at these days, you know, there can be just a really quick fare sale, sort of a flash sale with a few seats available, and you have to jump on it quickly. So if you follow these guys on Twitter, you'll often find the fare sales first. So Airfare Watchdog is great. Some other sites, Travelzoo, Cheapo Air, Hotwire, and Expedia all do good fare watching services, so they're also worth following.
Travelzoo, and what was the other one?
Cheapo Air.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Hotwire and Expedia.
That's going to bring us to safety, airline safety. We're going to get to that. You know, which companies are safe and which aren't. Sandra, Faith Middleton with Amy Farley, trip doctor at Travel and Leisure Magazine. Go ahead, Sandra.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I have a quick question about what pattern that I've seemed to notice, and I wanted to see if you saw any evidence of it in regards to preferential treatment by gender. I've noticed that a lot more men get upgraded than perhaps some of us ladies. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that or see if it's maybe just me.
Well, that is an interesting question. Amy, what do you think?
I thought you were going to say preferential treatment that's biased against families. But against about gender, no, I don't think that's the case. I think airlines, honestly, are just looking at the numbers. So those who are getting upgraded really have the miles in their back pocket. This may be a sign of a larger symptom in corporate America about, you know, women in the glass ceiling or something like that, if they're not racking up as many miles as men on the road. But I don't think that there is a gender bias. I will say I think the families are getting stuck in the back of the plane too much, but that's a different topic.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Thank you so much, Sandra, for your call. Let's talk for a second about international airline safety. Sometimes we are using these airlines, we fly to a country and then we want to get to another place in that country, and we're signing up on these flights. We have no idea what these companies are. You did a very good column about how to figure this out.
You know, I would say the first thing that you should do, and it's tough because there are lots of low-budget carriers, especially in Asia. There's some cropping up in Africa, and obviously tons in Europe. But first and foremost, you can feel comfortable with any airline that is flying into the United States because the U.S. FAA has a very, very stringent policy, does a lot of background research onto aviation, civil aviation authorities in individual companies or individual countries, and also on the airlines operating there. So carriers aren't allowed into the U.S. unless they've met really high standards, and these standards are adopted by other countries and other aviation authorities across the world because the FAA really sets the bar. So if they're flying into the States, that's a very good sign. Similarly, if they're allowed to fly into Europe, the EU sets the bar high for their member countries. So if they're allowed to fly, operate in the EU, you can trust in them. Another thing you should look for is if they have an alliance with U.S. airlines. You know, there's all the global alliances, Star Alliance, One World, Sky Team. When they accept new members, they don't want to get any airline into the alliance that isn't going to operate safely. So they'll also apply high standards. And then, you know, if you're looking beyond that and you're looking for low budget or low-cost carriers in Europe, I like to look and see who their partners are in the areas where they operate. So if it's a spin-off carrier from, say, Singapore Airlines, which is a really well-known, very well-respected international carrier, it's usually more trustworthy. If they operate in countries that have high aviation standards, Singapore being one, Korea also is very good in that regard, then you can have more trust in those carriers. But, you know, there is always a little bit of this buyer beware. And you got to sort of look twice, especially if you're looking at sort of startup airlines. There's a lot that are launching in India, It's something that you should pay attention to. I spoke to one aviation expert, and this may be a level of research that you're not willing to do, but one aviation expert said, look at the age of the fleet, because if the airline is buying, you know, secondhand airplanes, that's not great. If they're buying airplanes directly from Boeing or from Airbus, when you buy a new airplane, you also buy pilot training for that aircraft. And so if they have new airlines in their fleet or new planes in their fleet, then you know that their pilots have been well-trained and well-prepared to fly those planes.
I thought this was interesting reading you. You said that the European Commission, and I'll give you this site in just a second, has this consumer-friendly approach, and they do this blacklist of airlines that are banned from entering member states of the European Commission. And all Filipino and Indonesian carriers are on the list, the blacklist, along with airlines from 16 African countries. And that's such a shame. Africa is so huge. There are so many people who live there, have to get in and have to get out. It's a shame about the standards there.
It's true. The thing is, a lot of those African countries don't have sort of the market yet to have planes that would even, you know, make money flying into Europe. At this point, if you, you know, the big carriers from South Africa and from Kenya and places like that that get a lot of international travelers, they will not be on the blacklist. But, you know, it's countries that typically wouldn't be flying to the EU anyway. But, yeah, the standards definitely vary around the world. In Africa, they vary more widely than other places.
By the way, that website is EC. European Commission, that stands for EC.Europa.EU. So that's EC.Europa.EU. Okay, Brian, Faith Middleton. I'm with Amy Farley, who's travel doctor for Travel and Leisure magazine. Go ahead, Brian.
I just missed the last few minutes, but I was going to say that I wanted to give a thumbs up to Aer Lingus, which has been badly maligned recently. We had a trip back and forth to Ireland here just in the last 2 weeks, and they treated us very, very well. The only bad part that we had of the whole deal was the fact that they've gotten together with JetBlue now. They have this partnership, and they're at the Terminal 5 down at Kennedy. Anybody that goes and joins, or like we did, goes for the lounge for the day of the travel, will be disappointed because it's the size of a broom closet.
But places to sit?
Oh, places to sit, but minuscule little area, and was a lot less than we had expected. I was under the impression that JetBlue and a Terminal 5 had built a whole new lounge, but it's a tiny little thing that I think is supposed to happen next year. But right now, forget about it.
Thank you, Brian.
Okay,
glad for your call.
I'm glad you brought up Aer Lingus. I do want to point out that's also a great carrier because if you're looking to fly affordably to Europe, Ireland has some of the lowest airport taxes in the world. So Aer Lingus is great because not only is it a great airline in and of itself, but you can also find affordable or more affordable flights to Europe. So it's a good carrier to keep on top of mind.
I have to tell you an experience I had. I was on an Air France plane, and as we were sitting getting ready to taxi down the runway, they started showing a film, and the film began with the assets of first class, and it showed lovely people bringing you trays of champagne and meals and napkins and flatware, and then it switched over and said, and these are the assets of economy, and someone stood there and said, and the seat back goes back, and the tray comes down, and the oxygen mask falls from the ceiling. I mean, it was the funniest thing I have ever seen, and I kept looking to see if anybody was laughing, and people were completely serious, and I thought, this is the difference. I mean, we understand in America what class consciousness is about, but in Europe, they really get it.
That's funny. I was actually speaking to somebody at American Airlines because they are reworking their cabins, their transatlantic cabins for their planes. Transcontinental planes, and they wanted to make it so the business class and the economy class don't sort of mingle. You don't have to walk through business class to get to economy. And I said, but where's the incentive for an economy passenger to to strive for a business class seat if they don't get to see the product as they go back and back and back to their tiny little seats. So I like the Air France approach. I mean, that it gives you something to strive for.
How about access to these lounges? How does that work? And can ordinary folks who aren't frequent flyers and aren't constant business travelers get access to these lounges?
You can. You have to pay for it, but you can, yes.
Is it a lot?
Usually it starts at about $25 up to $50 to access an airport lounge from a domestic mm-hmm. carrier.
And do you ask when you sign up for your ticket?
Don't have to. You can actually go right to the airport and then find your way to the lounge and then buy a day pass. So that's a great tip for holiday travel. If you get stuck in an airport, if there are weather delays or whatever it is, then you should just make yourself comfortable and buy a pass into the airport lounge. And the other thing is there's sort of this rise in independent airport lounges, which aren't associated with particular carriers. And some of them are sort of club style. There's something called Priority Pass, where you pay $100 or $99 annually, and then you pay $27 for every lounge that you visit that's part of the Priority Pass network. There's Plaza Premium, Number One Traveler, Service Air. These are all sort of independent lounge networks that you can access.
I want to ask you, Amy, about locking in a fare because you're nervous there aren't going to be any seats, and then you can't take advantage of that 24-hour price drop and how you work that. Carol Faith Middleton with the Trip Doctor from Travel and Leisure Magazine. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi. Thanks, Faith. Sure. I have two questions. One, if you request a senior fare, does that make it more difficult to find a seat
on a
plane? And the other is I don't have firm dates for departure and return. My daughter is having a baby out in Colorado. What's the best way to handle that when I'm not exactly sure when I will be leaving?
For the first question about senior fares, you've stumped the Trip Doctor. I don't have an answer for that, but it's very interesting, and it's something I'll look into. You may see that in a future column.
Yeah.
Okay. And for the second question, I'd say you're in a great position. So you're saying you have flexible dates.
Right.
Then what you should do is go to, a search engine. I love kayak.com. I think it's great. You can also look at Route Happy, which also is a great search engine. But you can play with sort of the different dates that you would depart and leave on. They often have sliding scales for when the lowest fare is. And I would just play around. It's a great position to be in. In general, if you're flying sort of midweek, that's when you'll find the best fares.
Yeah, okay, pray for a midweek berth.
Yep. Right. Yeah. So you would suggest just waiting more or less till the last minute and then going on these sites?
Yes, I mean, you could buy your ticket in advance. If you make a change to your ticket, though, you may have to pay, because you could buy your ticket in advance. I'm sorry, I'd buy your ticket at the last minute. I think that's probably the best way to go. You could buy it in advance, but then if you need to change the date, you'll have to pay not only a change fee, which is usually about $50 a ticket, but also often, depending on the class of ticket you buy, but if you're buying sort of the ones that you find online, you'd have to pay the difference in fare. And if the fare is going up, then you'll end up paying more. So
okay.
I would try to go last minute, especially if it's a more traveled route. If you're going to a very small airport and there's less flights in there, then you may want to book early on and go with the change fee.
Carol, are you going into Denver?
Yes.
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
so you're
then
okay.
I'd say Denver, you're okay, because there's lots of flights that are going in there.
Okay.
All right, thank you
All
so
right,
much.
Thank
Good luck.
You.
Yeah,
Thanks.
I hope it works.
Thank you.
All Bye. Right, Amy Farley, Trip Doctor for Travel and Leisure Magazine. Stay right there. We're going to come back in a very short while with more of the best travel tips, thanks to our Trip Doctor. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. That's FaithWNPR. We've been tweeting throughout this hour the tips, the websites from Amy Farley, who is trip doctor at Travel and Leisure magazine. If you want to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. We thank you for listening, and to our talented team, many thanks, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Amy Farley, I want to talk with you about these extra fees that we're seeing at airlines and at hotels. And I'll do that in 1 second. Open on the phone at 203-776-9677. I promised I would address this issue of locking in a flight because you're afraid you might not get a seat at all. Versus having some, partially locking it in and having some flexibility, switching around. Can you do that anymore?
Well, you do have, this 24-hour window after you find a fare. You can book your ticket, but you have 24 hours before, it really locks in, so you can sort of look around. I would say, though, one thing that sort of gives me relief, Orbitz has a great policy a great program where if you buy a ticket through Orbitz, and another traveler books the same ticket or the same flight on Orbitz for less money, you will get a refund. So if you're like me and you sort of always are anxious that maybe the fare is going to drop, have I been the sucker that's paid too much? Orbitz gives you comfort because they will pay you the difference in fare.
One of our colleagues did this with a site like this, and they really did send a refund. So let's talk about these sneaky charges that are coming from resorts, hotels, and the airlines themselves.
I think we all, I sometimes pile on in this regard as well for airlines and hotels, that you find this fare, you think it's great, or you find this hotel room rate and you think it's great, and then all the fees come piling on and you realize it's not so great. We are complicit in this because we, through all of our online hotel booking and fare searching, we demand to see lower fares and lower room rates. And so hotels and airlines are kind of put in this position in some way to offer these lower rates so they seem really competitive online, and then they sneak in the charges afterwards. So airlines sort of started it, and in recent years hotels have been kind of sneaking on. One of the things hotels have been doing is increasingly they're charging you what they call a resort fee, which used to be something that actually resorts would charge you because they had, big facilities to maintain, a pool and a golf course and, tennis courts and the like. But now you could be staying at a hotel in Vegas and you'll get a resort fee that includes the use of
a notary.
A notary, exactly. Which is something I frequently use on the road. But and the tough part is they are supposed to make these charges really visible, and it's supposed to sort of show when you're searching online, you're supposed to be able to see sort of what the total room rate would be with the resort fee. But that's just not happening very often. So you'll often, in Vegas, hotel rooms can be as low as $89 a night, and when you add on a $25 resort fee, that's a 30% increase on the room rate. So there is a little bit of sticker shock that's happening, and airlines, the FAA came in and addressed this with airlines, and now they have to be very upfront about all of their additional charges. I think we're going to see in the next year or so more regulation about the way hotels advertise their fares.
Yeah, I liked this column that you did a lot because you started calling some of these hotels, and you had to press and press and press, and they would finally admit that there was this special fee. That's why I refer to it as a sneaky fee. It's one thing if it's posted someplace. It's another thing if they won't even tell you when you ask.
I have to say, I find it so frustrating. And most of the hospitality analysts I spoke to find it outrageous as well. So I think as, the airfare, the sneaky airfare charges or airline charges, that took a lot of consumer advocacy before the FAA really stepped in. So I think we're going to see some people getting together and demanding more from hotels as well.
When you're looking up a hotel, how do you know which websites to trust in terms of the star ratings? And consumer recommendations. I know some people at some websites are hired to give their recommendations.
There are, you know, there's always the question of whether or not the review you're reading is great. What I often do is if I'm looking at a site like TripAdvisor, the, you know, 100% glowing reviews and the 100% I hate this place reviews, I just discount those and go right in the middle and look for the reviews in the middle. Hmm. You know, I think you have to take them, look at all user reviews with a bit of a jaded perspective. That's why, you know, at Travel and Leisure, we try to travel incognito wherever possible. We pay, we don't accept free travel. We pay for our reporters to visit hotels and write about them because we think it's really important to have an unbiased perspective, especially as the online space gets cluttered with user reviews that, you know, it's tough to tell whether or not you've got a genuine one or one that's been planted by a rival hotel mm-hmm. or, you know, by somebody that's employed by the hotel.
Mm-hmm. And do you trust these bed bug listings online about hotels, because we've heard from some of our hotel managers that competitors are jumping in and filing false reports, and so you can't figure out whether they really had bed bugs or this is a competitor.
That's a good point. I have to say the bed bug accusation is so damning mm-hmm. that I would not take that lightly. I mean, that could ruin a hotel's reputation. So I would be wary when looking at that. But you could call the hotel and ask directly, you know, if they have bed bugs, they may not be totally honest, but what sort of cleaning techniques they have. One piece of advice that I've been told is don't take your suitcase and set it on the bed, because if there are bed bugs, the last thing you want is for your belongings to get infected with them. So stick them on top of a piece of furniture, like a wooden piece of furniture, where bed bugs can't really infest as easily. So, you know, you may, worst case scenario, you get a few bites, but the clothes and everything that you're bringing home remains clean. Mm,
so no suitcase on the floor where the carpeting is.
No suitcase on the floor, no suitcase on the bed, put it on top of a piece of furniture.
Okay. And here is, to come back to this thing about the what I call sneaky charges, the idea is to keep questioning at the hotel you're calling, right? To keep pressing. There is no other fee. This is the absolute total. What is the tax? So what is my absolute total? Perhaps even to get this in writing from them in some way, because it's during checkout time that they suddenly announce this extra charge, right?
No, I mean, often you'll find it like somewhere buried on the fine print early on, but you won't necessarily see it, especially when you're sort of booking your reservations online. It'll say, here's the total, and then underneath it'll say plus $25 per day resort fee. I will say one thing you can do. Hotels were more flexible about this. They're becoming less flexible, but it's worth doing. You know, if you go to Vegas and you stay at a hotel in Vegas and you really just use the room and you didn't use the internet, you didn't use the phone, you didn't use the gym, you're within your rights to go to the front desk and say, look, you know, I want to be loyal to this hotel. I come to Vegas on business a lot. I'd stay here again. What can you do for me? Can you be flexible about this resort fee? I mean, hotels really are battling for your loyalty. So if you present yourself as somebody that could and would come back, they will be more receptive to negotiating.
Amy, what's the best way to get a room upgrade at a hotel?
You know, there are some tips like arriving later in the day after the hotel is basically most people have checked in. You know, if you look for a new hotel that is courting loyalty, you'll be better, you know, or bigger hotels. Mm-hmm. I think social media is a big way to get a hotel's attention. If you let the hotel know, you know, you tweet something before you arrive saying how excited you are to go to this hotel and check it out. When you get there, say, wow, this hotel looks great. I mean, be honest. Don't mm-hmm. flatter unnecessarily. But you may find that something comes your way. Or the next time you go to the hotel, if you've, you know, sort of shared your enthusiasm about the hotel after your visit, the next time you go there, you may find a reward comes your way.
Mm. This is Amy Farley, who's trip doctor at Travel and Leisure Magazine, on the show with us for this hour, giving her best travel tips. We appreciate it so much. We've been tweeting throughout the hour. I'm at Faith W NPR, and also at our site, you will see all the online sites that are from Amy's column, but I encourage you to read it. recommended. It is so informative. And that's in Travel and Leisure magazine. Our number here is 203-776-9677 if you have a travel question for Amy Farley. There's been a lot of talk about searching for, you know, it's more and more of this, apartments in the city you're traveling to, especially abroad. And there are lots of people in New York City who are also offering their apartments legally and illegally. All over the world this happens. And pictures get posted, and we hear these stories of people coming back and saying, oh, those were fake pictures. It was a disaster of a hotel or an apartment. And, you know, they were asking me to not say anything to the doorman. How do you figure out if the pictures are real, if the whole thing's legal? What do you advise?
You know, it is an interesting space, apartment rentals. Airbnb took off a few years ago and has grown exponentially from a couch surfing website to, you know, a site that really offers up an entire apartment and luxury apartments at that. You know, I think you have to suss out if the person is, you get the person on the phone if you can, really engage with the person over email to really see if you can suss out. You got to follow your gut if they seem legitimate. If they're asking you to disguise your presence in the apartment or in the building to pretend like you're their cousin and sort of sneak in, then I think you need to be suspicious about whether or not this is a legal rental. I will say, though, that these apartment rental sites in the U.S. and abroad are operating in a very gray legal territory.
Mm-hmm.
And Airbnb especially is sort of right now engaged in a PR campaign in New York City because you know, it really is, by and large, technically not legal to rent your apartment in New York City. There are a few exceptions. If you are, I believe, on the lease and in the apartment at the time that somebody is staying there, or if you are in a building with four or fewer units in it. But, you know, if you're in a big condo, if you're renting an apartment from somebody in a big condo building, that's probably not technically legal. Whether or not you're going to get in trouble for renting that apartment is a different story. But the person who is renting it is definitely operating on shaky ground.
Thank you, Amy. Paul Faith Middleton, welcome to the show. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Yes. Do I might go ahead and just talk?
Yes, you just talk.
Okay. I've never done this before. Okay.
No, that's good. So if you had a question or a comment, we'd love to hear it.
Okay. I'm sorry, Faith. I didn't realize I was talking to you. I'm kind of in the car here. My name is Paul, and my wife and I are educators. I was just wondering if you guys had any advice about traveling over the holidays when educators have the holidays off with my 11 and 7-year-old.
Okay, great, Paul. And if you hang up, we'll give you some thoughts on this. And it's a great question, Paul, because this is when it is hard to get a seat. And I always forget it's around, you know, March and April when you're just so blue from the lack of sunlight and warmer temperatures seem great. And then you try to get a flight somewhere and it's impossible. So, Amy, what do you say? Do you have any solutions?
Book early, plan your travel early. I am married to an educator as well, so I know I can sympathize. During spring break time, you know, especially if you're doing sort of or looking for flights, say, from New York City to ski destinations or warm weather destinations, mm-hmm. those you can have trouble finding seats on, especially because everybody is traveling with their family. So, you know, it's not just couples that are on the plane. It's parties of four. So I would say if you can plan your travel early, this is the time to book early.
You have been terrific. I applaud you on this column. It is real information, and it's been just a pleasure to read. Thank you so much, Amy Farley.
Thank you for having me on. It's been fun.
Okay, I hope you come back. Amy Farley, Trip Doctor, monthly column in Travel and Leisure magazine. She covers so much. And again, as she was mentioning, one of the reasons I appreciate it is that they are not accepting freebies at the magazine. The staff rules are that they pay for everything and they travel pretty much incognito. As always, this show is about the richness of life. Find the books, travel tips, people, recipes, wine, and cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.